Hello and welcome to the Soccer Coach Weekly podcast with me, Steph Fairbairn. Thank you for joining us as we get insights and ideas from coaches working across the game to help you develop into the coach you want to be. This episode, I'm back again with Maurits Kosman, a coach at Ubuntu Football Academy in Cape Town, where he coaches the under-21s, who play in the third tier of South African football, and oversees the senior section, made up of under-18s and under-16s. Maurits is back on the Soccer Coach Weekly podcast to talk about finishing. We discuss what it is, how it's done, and how we can coach our players to finish better. First, though, he gave me a definition of finishing.
Well, finishing is obviously referring to the act of attempting to score a goal. So that can obviously be done with various parts of the body. I mean, in the official rules of the games, you can score with any body part except your hands and your arms, right? So finishing would refer to, I would say, any act of attempting to score a goal. And I think I even in preparation for the podcast, read up what one would call the difference between a shooting and finishing. But I would say shooting is just a form of finishing.
So if shooting is a form of finishing, then I suppose what are the other forms of finishing and what are the things that contribute to finishing?
Well, you know, one could, I guess, say that shooting is most commonly the act of attempting to score from a little bit further out. There's obviously the modern game where things have moved a little bit more towards attempting to score from closer ranges with things like expected goals and stuff, where in the past there was a higher proportion of shots from further distances. But there's also, you know, heading is a form of finishing or attempting to finish and score. I think one-touch finishes in the box are perhaps the most common form of finishing. And so perhaps with the expected goals revolution coming into the game and therefore a higher proportion of shots being taken off from inside the box compared to previously where there was a higher proportion from outside the box and perhaps also from acute angles, there's definitely a trend towards finishes happening more often with one touch and perhaps less with power, a power focus and more a placement focus, and certainly more of a focus on attempting to finish quickly rather than, let's say, more traditionally like loading up, taking your time and trying to really smash the ball at goal. Obviously, that is still an important skill for players to learn. But yeah, I think if we take the analysis of where the game is going, the finishing inside the box and particularly in what some refer to as the golden zone, which would be, you know, if you make a box from the width of the 6 yard all the way to the penalty spot, and then that is like a small rectangular box. I think most commonly learning to finish quickly with one touch in that zone, for me, would be the most important aspect of the act of attempting to score goals.
Okay, you've given me so many angles to pick up on. So I suppose in no particular order, you mentioned power and placement there. Could you expand a bit more on what they are, when they might be important, when you might choose one over the other?
Yeah, I mean, if I can refer to my own work in South Africa, you know, one thing that South African football's very famous for is a little bit of, let's call it style over substance or flair over efficiency, where you know, the South African teams generally play quite nice football between the boxes, but really struggle to finish at goal. And a large part of that reason is that the players often shoot at the goal, but they aren't aiming for somewhere. It's more like, I'm going to shoot as hard as possible. And, you know, if I'm lucky, the ball ends in the corner of the goal. But really, I'm just grossly aiming at the large target that is the goal. And so as a result, there's really a very low efficiency, even at the highest level in our country, of shots compared to actual amount of goals scored. And so if I had to say, for me, the most important rule for finishing would be to say as accurate as possible and as hard as necessary. So I think for me, that's the most crucial key. There's obviously the aspect of power, which is determined by how far you are from the goal, the distance between you and the keeper, the amount of defenders that might be blocking. So obviously different field positions might require different levels of power, but the aspect of accuracy is the most crucial. And obviously for any football player, the more accurate or the harder they kick, the more they tend to lose the accuracy. And so we've got to teach our players that, well, they got to learn to aim at particular areas of the goal and then use the power as a secondary aspect in order to have an efficient or a good action in that moment. But if I have a clear shot at goal from 10 meters out with a goalkeeper to beat, well, I don't need to try to smash the ball through him, but rather let me try to place it in the corner where, you know, someone like Messi, who's obviously one of the most fantastic football players of all time, you know, his very kind of signature action when shooting at goal is, you know, really a side foot, almost like a pass, like a very hard side foot pass. And I think that is a very graphical and practical example to support the theory that shooting or finishing needs to be as accurate as possible and as hard as necessary. And Arjen Robben being another example of a proponent of that similar shooting technique, side foot, always aiming at the far corner of the goal. And I think that there's at the top level, there's certainly a movement towards that.
Give us a bit more then, if you can, on that technique. So when we're working with players and we're looking to teach them that technique, what are we talking to them about in terms of what they're doing with their feet? So if we're talking about a finish with the foot, what they're doing with their feet, what they're doing with their body positioning, all of that.
Well, first things first then would be the side foot or the side of your foot obviously offers a larger surface area than the lace area. And so when you are finishing from, let's say, within the range of, and it depends on the ages of our players, it might be different for younger rather than older players, where the relative range to the goal that they can still shoot hard enough, let's call it, with a side foot would be different. I think that, but the side foot offers a larger surface area. And so as a starting point, I think it makes sense to prefer that in a way over the laces, whereas the laces obviously offer a smaller surface area, but you can generally get more power with it. So for me, that it's still important, but it would be a secondary technique that I would teach. Obviously, the placement of the non-kicking foot next to the ball is crucial. So placing that relatively close but next to the ball gives you a stable base to work from. I think with the upper body, the most traditional coaching point that you can make is the one of trying to lean over the ball more or less rather than leaning far back, which then causes a tendency to kick the ball over the target. But another point for the shooting at goal from further distance would be something like trying to hit the ball in the correct spot. So I was actually doing like a little bit of just messing around before a training session with some of our players. And a big key for me personally to kick the ball compared to how they were kicking the ball was that I was very much trying to focus on hitting the ball sort of in the sweet spot, in the center of the ball, whereas some of them were swinging much harder at the ball, but were hitting it in sort of unfavorable places and thereby not getting actually even the same amount of power, relatively speaking, even though they were swinging much harder. So a little bit of a focus on clean action over just maximal heavy power, I think is also an important consideration. But yeah, again, trying to always aim with your shots at goal rather than just trying to smash through, which then you tend to lose the body shape in that process. It's almost like a golfer, isn't it? Where it's like, if I'm trying to hit a drive and I'm just trying to really smash the ball, I tend to actually not get the maximum distance that I can get, but I might be just hooking the ball to one side or shanking it to the other side. And I think shooting, even when you're trying to teach power as a secondary thing, it's kind of very similar to that, even though we are obviously talking of this action being executed in a dynamic environment where golf is obviously a more static environment.
Is there an element of disguise as well that we want to teach players to use when they're shooting?
I think so, certainly. And that's where, again, the training with opponents becomes a key thing, you know. And opponents doesn't necessarily mean that we have to train with many defenders, but even a goalkeeper is an opponent, right? And so if I am a little bit shaping up as if I'm shooting for the near corner, but then wrapping my foot around it to shoot for the far corner instead, it is certainly very, very useful. Or if I have infield defenders in my practice, then trying to shoot it in a way that the defender blocks the goalkeeper's sight, or even at the very highest level, like, you know, you see players disproportionately often shoot and finish the ball through the legs of a defender, which is another thing that makes it extremely difficult for the goalkeepers to see the ball and anticipate. You know, even at a modern level, at the highest level of the game, I think defenders and keepers get taught that in the box, defenders should attempt to block an area of the goal when they are in a goal side position. And then the goalkeeper will, relative to that, be perhaps sliding over slightly to the other side from the center of the goal, and then trusting the defenders to attempt to block a side of the goal. And then, you know, having an advantage towards the other side of the goal, where if I can anticipate, this is obviously very high level stuff for much later, but if I can anticipate the movements of the defender and being able to kick the ball through their legs, it's got an enormous advantage in terms of picking the goalkeeper off in terms of where he is in the goal.
So you referenced numerous body parts at the start that you can finish with. I suppose the other big one we should talk about is the head. Can you talk us through the technique of shooting and finishing with the head?
I think it's obviously a tricky one, particularly at grassroots level, to teach, because you know, there is a lot of considerations about the impact of heading in terms of concussion on our players, especially at a younger age. And there is the consideration of the players being afraid of the ball when learning to head at a younger age. And so it's a tricky thing to teach, because it's obviously an important part of the game, but it's not as straightforward to learn as perhaps kicking the ball might be at the very youngest age. Nevertheless, especially our forwards and defenders need to be proficient at heading. And so something that I've seen a colleague of mine do, particularly in the stages of trying to introduce a technique of heading the ball, would be to use lightweight, large tennis balls, for example, as a tool. And those are quite cheap to afford, so most clubs should be able to afford those. But it's a nice way to take away that fear of players of learning to head the ball, and thereby also being able to introduce a correct technique, which I think for heading would be obviously trying to use your back muscle as the main tool rather than your neck muscles, which, you know, I often see players head the ball with their neck muscles and they just can't get the right amount of power, and you might also be hurting yourself more in that process. Whereas if you're using your back muscles almost as a sling you are able to get a lot more power. Another key is which part of the head you use to head at the ball. And there's different moments in the game where that might change, where like a glancing header might be very much done with the top of the head, or even at times in exceptional circumstances with the back of the head. But most headers, and certainly the most basic ones to teach, would be the forehead technique, where first I'm just trying to learn to meet the ball with the forehead from a ground position and header it down. And then the next step would be to meet the ball from a jumping, which has obviously got a big timing aspect to it, and then trying to header the ball down with the forehead, where players can then also learn that if they are headering with the forehead, that they're much less likely to get hurt in that process, rather than if they are headering with, as a first thing, with the top of the head, where the concussion element becomes much more prevalent.
So I think you've kind of given really good overviews of the technique of the kind of final part of the finish. What about the lead up to the finish in terms of how we want to encourage players to set themselves up, whether it's about movement or body position and the actions that lead up to that final action?
Yeah, I think that is actually the most key aspect, because as we said earlier, in the box, we're most likely to be finishing these days in the box itself, which in most situations comes with a really high level of opponent pressure. And so we have generally only got one touch to make a finish at goal. Now, it's extremely difficult to finish technically clean when I'm doing it from a standing position, right? I will really struggle to react to the flight and the movement of the ball from a static position. So a big coaching point for me is to try to arrive at the same time as the ball arrives in the place where you're wanting to strike the ball. So if we take a service from wide as a starting point and we're passing it into the box, then I don't want our forward that they are standing in the box already, but rather that they are making a run and then that they are meeting the ball in the place where they are wanting to shoot at goal. So this aspect of finishing from a dynamic position rather than from a static position is extremely key, because from a dynamic position, I am much more agile. I'm able to react much better. I have a much larger range of movement and range of space that I can react to than when I'm doing it standing still, where I can't get as high in the air. I'm not as agile to react to perhaps the bounce of the ball on a bad field or a late action from a defender to attempt a block. So this for me is the most important, is this: can I meet the ball dynamically in order to make the finish? And then, yeah, you know, a run in the box, like it's very important that I'm making movements off the ball towards the zones on the field where finishing is most likely to yield results, right? I think it was Gary Lineker who said that recently in an interview, that if he made 7 or 8 runs in behind the defense as a forward, then he sort of expected that he would get a finish on goal maybe on one occasion out of those 7 or 8. And that is another thing to teach to our players, that they get used to, particularly forwards and midfielders, that they might very often make runs into promising positions. And most often the result is they're not going to get the ball. But those runs still need to be made, because football is a low-scoring sport, right? And so if I am making 10 runs into the box and I get a promising finish from 2 of those, hypothetically, and I score on 1 of those, I've had a very, very large impact on the game. So teaching our forwards and midfielders this aspect of patience and being able to take moments where they make actions that don't yield immediate results, especially when we're moving towards 11v11, I think is very, very key. And learning that those runs into promising positions can still, even if you don't get the ball, they can still have a really good effect on the game as a whole, because it might take other defenders out of positions and create space for other players to finish. It might even just mean that the opponent, when they win the ball back, are winning it back in lower zones on the field from where it's more difficult to counterattack. And so, yeah, we got to learn that making movements will always influence the game in an indirect way, but not always in a direct way. And if we are able to understand that, I think that's a real key to being a really, really good attacking player.
I think that's a really interesting point. And just building on the patience element of it, do you think a lot of it is also faith and confidence and building those players up to, like you say, keep going and keep trying? Because the run might not come to something, the shot might not come to something, but actually it's a numbers game. And the more you do it, the more likely you are to kind of finish with a positive action.
Certainly. And I think, again, that that's an angle to approach training from a more opposed basis, where in an opposed session, let's say a simple 4v4 small-sided game, I need to do an amount of work to create a finish. Whereas if I'm only training the finish in isolation, then obviously the finish is a predetermined thing, where understanding that I have to do a certain amount of work before I get rewarded with the finish is an elementary part of the game. And I often see this with especially younger forwards, let's say anything below 16 or 17, that they often very much struggle with this element of understanding that they're not going to be able to influence the game positively in every moment. And, you know, football is fundamentally a low-scoring sport. It's not basketball. You know, in basketball, I was looking at the highlights of a Lakers and Nuggets game, and it finished 126 to 130, right? And most football games have less than 4 goals happening in 90 minutes, which means, you know, by definition, when a team has the ball, they are always attacking and the other team is defending. But if there's usually less than 4 goals in a 90-minute game, it also consequently is only logical that over 90% of our attacks break down without a successful result, i.e. scoring a goal. And attackers have to understand that, unlike defenders, they are in the business of taking risks and attempting creative actions rather than in the business of trying to not make mistakes and minimize mistakes. And so naturally, whatever we attempt to do as attackers, we are always going to make more mistakes than what we are going to have successful actions, certainly on a team level. And having a little bit of a short memory in terms of, okay, I made a mistake or something didn't work, but still making the thinking next action and making the next action with 100% mental and physical concentration is really, really key. I think that's where a player like a Thomas Muller is really good, where, you know, many coaches have said that Thomas Muller could play 80 minutes and they were awful, but then he would have such a short memory of that, and he might very well score 2 goals in the last 10 minutes and have ultimately a very large impact on the outcome.
The act of finishing isn't really complete till the ball's in the back of the net. If there is a player that is trying to execute that, what do we want from our other players that are in attacking positions at that point?
Well, I think if a player is attempting the shot at goal, it's a big principle for coaches should be to try to get many attackers into the box, firstly. Because if I have many attackers in the box, it's highly likely that the defending team is going to answer that by also having many defenders in the box. But if I have many attackers in the box, most often there might be a rebound of the shot and or a blocked shot. And if I have more players close to the ball, it's just statistically more likely that the ball is going to drop with one of them. Or if then more defenders are also coming into the box, it just means that the opponent has to run a counterattack from much deeper and has less players in a position higher up the field to immediately start a counterattack with numbers up. And that's another aspect, is even the players that are further away from the ball, let's say even around the halfway line or somewhere in the middle of the opponent half, they're also crucial, because while we are attacking, we also need to prepare for the transition element. And anyone off the ball has an indirect influence on how that moment is going to play out. So getting our players to understand that, you know, firstly, the ball could come to them very quickly at any time, but also that even further away from the ball, they fulfill an important function. And I think at the end of the day, all 11 players have a crucial team function at any moment of the game, because, yeah, football certainly getting faster and faster over the years. And that means that situations also change quicker and quicker. And for us to be able to cope in that environment, we need to be able to prepare our actions better and better.
Now, just kind of before we get to the wrap-up questions, I wanted to ask you, we hear a lot about attacker's instinct or striker's instinct. How much of it do you think actually is instinct, and how much of it can be practiced and learned?
There's obviously, I think, a genetic element to the success or non-success of any sportsman or football player, but there's also an environmental aspect. So how we train it obviously makes a huge difference. But some players obviously have a bigger talent than others. You know, even I would take myself, if you put me into an amazing finishing practice for 1 year every day, I'm still not going to be Erling Haaland at the end of that year, most likely. So there's certainly a genetic and an environmental aspect to it. Training finishing under high levels of space and time pressure probably will help our players to develop an instinct for finishing. I think what is referred to as an instinctual finish is usually a very quick finish. So a finish where a player shoots at goal before even turning, or like does it on the turn, or does it with one touch immediately as they are receiving the ball. So training that under high space and time pressure is probably the way to go, because it's going to provoke these very quick and perhaps instinctual finishes. But I think we, in the previous episode, talked a bit about scanning, and scanning is not just where I think it's most commonly associated with passing actions in the middle of the field. But scanning is also crucial for the forward, of predetermining where the goal is relative to where he is on, or where they are on the field, so that they have the ability to take that quick shot as they are receiving the ball. So scanning is something that is done, obviously, where are the opponents, where are the teammates, and where am I on the field, but also where is the goal and where am I relative to the goal, so that I have a chance to aim at the most promising area of the goal relative to where I'm on the field. And so developing that instinct, I would say we need space and time pressure in our training, and we need an ability to scan for relevant information even in the final third, and even as the game is very quick in its characteristic in and around the box.
So you reference throughout kind of the space and time pressures that we need when we're training finishing. Do you have any sessions that are kind of your go-tos when you think about finishing?
Yes, I think there's a 3v2 practice that I like to do with our players in two teams, where there's an element of a combination and then running at goal, attacking against two defenders in a relatively small playing area with a goalkeeper in the goal. Now, the 3v2 is nice because I still have that aspect of having to work a little bit, let's call it, on a team level to create a promising finishing situation. But because I am attacking with numbers up against the defenders, I should most often be able to create a finish because, yeah, I have a numerical advantage in the process. You know, that practice, I usually do it with two teams alternating, and that creates a high level of competition because there's two playing areas happening right next to each other where the one team is attacking on the one side and the other team is attacking on the other side. And then this alternating aspect also means that they get to watch each other in the process. But there's also a recovery that is worked into the practice, which then means that we can perhaps make more high tempo actions because we also naturally get quite a bit of rest while we are watching on the other side. A nice constraint or rule to use within this is that any generic goal counts for 1 point. But if I am shooting at goal with one touch and I score, I get 2 points for that. And you can even add another one to it, which is that if I assist with one touch and score with one touch, then that is 3 points. And so that it can be a nice way to try to get our players to make those one-touch instinctual actions at goal, but it doesn't force them. So in moments where they have a promising finishing situation where it makes sense to dribble the ball and to then shoot at goal, they can also do that because 1 point is obviously a lot better than none. But this reward rule that I've just given is obviously a nice way to encourage but not force.
And you've given so much context around all of this. I suppose, can you just summarize maybe what the building blocks are that we'd be looking to kind of deliver to players as they move from beginner stages through to advanced? What things should we be looking to coach them as they progress through with their finishing technique?
I think in the beginning, it makes a lot of sense to learn to strike the ball in with different parts of the foot, but also into the correct spot on the ball relative to the part of the foot that I'm using. So obviously, if I'm kicking with the side of the foot, maybe I'm trying to hit the ball in the center or slightly off center. Certainly, if I'm striking with the laces, then I'm trying to hit the ball in a very central spot. If I'm trying to put a little bit of curl on it, I might try to wrap my foot around it a bit more. And so learning the action of striking a ball cleanly is definitely a crucial starting point. As we're going along, learning to then being able to kick at goal or shoot at goal with one touch only is perhaps the next step, because as we've analyzed the game, we've seen that that's the most common method of finishing. And the next step then is perhaps that, as you described, the disguise element, as well as the element of learning to time runs. And then later on, as we are moving towards 11v11, I think the element of understanding that I have to make many high intensity actions that aren't going to be successful and that aren't even going to yield a finish at all. So this learning aspect of managing your disappointment is perhaps more towards the end. I think heading is trained parallel, and as a part of that, probably starting off with the lighter, softer ball and focusing on the technique. And then as you're going along, you're moving from heading from the ground towards heading from an aerial point, so jumping and heading the ball, would be the later stage of learning the finishing technique. I think training with opposition as much as possible and as little as necessary. So trying to not oversimplify the game, but at the same time, training where we have sufficient but also realistic repetition is a very big key. And, you know, any old game that you play, there's different constraints and rules that you can introduce to make finishing a focus point of the session. You know, there's a coach called Foppe de Haan that used to work with Heeren Veen in Holland and the under 21 national team in Holland. And he came to South Africa to train Ajax Cape Town back in the day. And he saw this element that I described very early on about just shooting randomly at goal rather than aiming. And so what he did to counter that is he built zones in the goal, in the corners of the goal. So he would mark it out with a tape or with a stick or some cones, and then would say that, well, if you score a goal, it's 1 point. But if you manage to kick the ball into the corners that I've marked out, it counts for 1 or 2 points. So even in a small-sided game, without any other constraints, I can very much add a finishing focus by doing something like that.
Amazing. Well, look, I do want to give you the option if there's any additional stuff that you want to say about finishing or anything you think I haven't covered just before we wrap up.
Yes, I think there's one nice thought that I have on the finishing from the German FA is that, you know, how do we decide when to aim low at the goal and when do we aim higher? And I think a nice rule of thumb, which obviously doesn't apply in every situation, but perhaps is applicable to more situations than not, is that if I'm aiming at the far corner of the goal, that I try to shoot low. And if I'm aiming at the near corner of the goal, perhaps I'm trying to shoot high and go over the keeper. And that is also, I think, when we are attacking the keeper one-on-one, a very underrated ability is the ability to shoot over the goalkeeper, because if he's in a lower blocking position, they are able to block the lower parts of the goal more often, but it's going to be quite difficult for them to get their hands up in the air and block the higher parts of the goal. And so in a 1v1 situation, the higher finish trying to go over the keeper that is outside of their goal is an underrated technique that is quite likely to yield results often. So yeah, that's a couple of last rule of thumb thoughts that I have.
That was the voice of Maritz Kossmann. Thanks to Maritz for his time and for sharing his expertise with us once more. And thanks to you for listening to the Soccer Coach Weekly podcast. For more from us, join us again next time or visit soccercoachweekly.net for practice plans, advice, interviews, and much more. I'm Steph Fairbairn. See you again soon.